From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The government's taking of private property for public use or eminent domain is a long-standing practice in the U.S. A 2005 Supreme Court decision expanded the use of eminent domain, allowing governments to take private property for private benefit and not just for public use. Supporters of broad eminent domain powers say it can result in economic redevelopment, but a pair of Florida Gulf Coast University economics professors recently published a study showing that just the opposite is true. We'll take a closer look. Plus, a living legend in American art comes to Naples this month for a retrospective exhibition of some of his most iconic work. We'll talk with world-renowned artist Peter Max. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for being with us. Artist Peter Max comes to Naples this weekend for a retrospective exhibition of his work spanning four decades from of his iconic paintings. Max's work is said to have done to the visual art world what the Beatles did for music. His work has graced the covers of thousands of magazines, and his paintings can be seen on the walls of hundreds of galleries throughout the globe. He's painted for five U.S. presidents, served as the official artist for five NFL Super Bowls, the 2006 Olympics, the World Series, the Grammys, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the U.S. Open, the Indy 500, and that's just naming a few. The Mercato in Naples will host this exhibition, including two receptions with Max himself. The first will be on Saturday, January 24th from 6 to 9 in the evening, and on Sunday the 25th from 2 to 5. Joining us now, I have the distinct pleasure of introducing pop culture icon and living legend, Peter Max. Thanks so much for your time today, and welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Do we have Peter Max with us?
I'm here with you.
Oh, perfect. Thanks for being with us today. Appreciate it. And I invite
listeners. You can hear me, right?
I can hear you now, yes. I invite listeners to join us as well. You can connect with Peter Max with phone calls to 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or join the live Twitter chat using hashtag GulfCoastLive. And in order to understand your artwork and your influences, I was hoping we could go back to, well, the beginning. I know when you were very young, your parents left Berlin amid the growing Nazi movement, and you ended up spending your early years in Shanghai, China. Tell us a bit about growing up in Shanghai. And
it was, now, you know, looking back, it was amazing. Looking back, I can't even believe I was there. We probably arrived when I was just about a year old, and we were there till I was about 10 and a half, 11, in Shanghai, China. With the last year or so, we were about 9 months in Tibet. And for me, it was exciting beyond belief. But, you know, having left there, years later, I realized 100 times more how exciting it was. Because when I was there, I thought every kid lives in China, you know, like has a world like mine. But when I came back and, I left from there, we went to Tibet, back to Shanghai, from Shanghai to Israel, lived there for 3 years. Then we went to Paris for a year,
and then
we came to New York.
All right, so yeah, quite a journey to the U.S.
Yeah.
I know that one particularly influential person in your life, from that first period in Shanghai, was a nanny your mother had hired to look after you. Tell us about Umba, I think her name was, and how your parents came across her.
What happened was that my father, who owned about three or four retail stores, and these retail stores were quite large, and they made European clothes, you know, men's suits, vests, shirts, pants, all that stuff, for the 10,000 Europeans that lived there during that period in the middle 40s. And but at night, my father, he must have loved to draw, and he drew, and sometimes I would draw with him, and, you know, he got me excited about it, but he liked to draw, you know, doodle around. And when my mother saw me do it one day, I remember she told me, I was maybe three or four, we had a peach wall near our dining room, and I had some crayons, and I wanted to draw on the peach wall. And my mother said, no, you know, don't draw on the wall. And my father said, let him do it, let him do it. Then she said, okay, sweetie, go ahead, enjoy. So I drew on the wall with big crayons, huge wall, right, you know. And I'm like about maybe 6, 7 years old. And every day I added more colors, more crayons, different crayons. And I kept on drawing and drawing, and I just loved it and loved it. And so I started drawing a lot with my father. And one day, as the story goes, my mother told me, near where we lived in a beautiful pagoda house, outside about a half a block away, there was a Chinese artist in the street every day. She used to see him. And, you know, he would sell his drawings. He would draw, and he had like an easel, and then he had a can. People would put a few, you know, whatever would be equivalent today, maybe a few quarters in, and he would give him a drawing. And one day my mother asked him if he can come to our house, which was down the street, and teach a little boy how to draw. And he says he can't. He's got to stay here and do this. But he has a daughter who draws very nicely, and she'll come over. So as the story goes, as my mother told me later on what happened, you know, the next day a girl showed up, and she had, like, clutching to her chest, maybe like 50 sheets of paper and a bunch of pens and crayons and stuff. And she was maybe, I was at the time maybe 3, 4 years old. She was about 9 or 12, you know, like 12 years old. And my mother didn't know, but she just hired her for a day or so, but she liked how the two of us worked. So it was day after day, and I understand, you know, that I was about 3, 4, and maybe at the time, and we didn't leave China until I was 6. So there was another, we didn't leave China until I was 10, 6 years later. So when she was about 9 or so, when I left China, I was 10, and she was maybe 15 or 16. And I remember when the ship pulled away from Shanghai and I saw the buildings going away in the distance as the ship pulled away, I suddenly realized I'm not going to see Umba, what's her name, U-M-B-A. And I started to cry. I suddenly realized I would never see her again, or maybe not see her for a long time. And as the years went on, I never forgot her. And I kept on drawing and drawing, and even today, every once in a while, I think about it. And it was like an amazing beginning, you know?
Yeah, I had read that, you know, later in life you had made efforts to try and find Umba and reconnect. Were those efforts successful?
No, I was in Shanghai 3 times in the last 2 years, and I hired public relation people, the magazine people, talked about Umba. But then again, you know, she could have even been in Shanghai when I looked for her. How many people would be today? There's thousands of magazines out, right?
Right.
And newspapers. Maybe she didn't hear it, or maybe she's not around anymore, or maybe she's not where I went. But I still miss her today. If she came here, I would do my best to bring her to America. I would buy her a home, and she could live with us or be near us and spend every day in my studio, and I would cater to her the way she did to me, you know, just to pay back what she, you know, she started going, she started doing with me.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I hope you are able to find her.
Oh, I hope so.
I also understand you studied astronomy. What do you think accounts for your fascination with astronomy, and at any point had you considered taking that career path?
Not as a career, but I'm fascinated because when I was in Shanghai and I drew with the Umba from 3 till I was 10, and sometimes she used to take me to the park. We used to draw in the park. And one day on the park bench, there was an elderly man, a European man, sitting there. And he maybe was slightly gray-haired, so maybe he could have been in his 50s or 60s, and I was about 6, 7 years old. And he looked at me, and he saw me drawing, and he pointed at the moon. It was daytime, but like maybe 4 or 5 in the afternoon. He said, "You know what it is?" I said, "Yes, that's the moon." He goes, "Oh, you know." And then he pointed to a couple other stars that would be shining already, and he told me about the stars. And he must have been very fascinated by astronomy, and that's all he would talk to me about. And the fact is, that night I went home, and when I was lying like in bed, I looked out the window to my side, and I looked at the moon, and I was fascinated 10 times more than I ever was before, because what he told me about it, that the moon is floating in space and not too far from us, and, you know, all the stories this guy had. And then I saw him again and again, and I got so fascinated by that. So I had two gigantic fascinations, art, drawing, and space. And now, even where I'm sitting here now, I'm looking through the mirror, at the mirror, and there's a piece right behind me, all with planets and stars, as I'm talking to you about it.
Right. I was going to say, from some of your work, your lifelong fascination with astronomy seems quite clear. Well, let's move forward a little bit also. I know that you were a realist painter in the Art Students League in New York, and that style just seems quite different from the innovative graphic art, more surrealist style that your name has sort of become synonymous with. Could you speak to how your work evolved?
Well, when I studied at the Art Students League, I studied with an amazing gentleman by the name of Frank J. Riley. And when he was a student in the same school where he now is a teacher, maybe 40 years before I met him, right, or 20, 30 years before, the kid that sat next to him was another great artist, and he turned out to be Norman Rockwell. So Frank Riley, my teacher, was best friends with Norman Rockwell in the same classroom where now he is a teacher. And in the seat where Norman Rockwell used to sit, I used to sit a lot in that seat and drew with Riley. And I became very fascinated with Rockwell, and one day I met him. He came to visit Riley, and I was so excited, you know, like meeting a movie star was fantastic.
Right, right. Well, and I know that you've done thousands of magazine covers, actually more than Norman Rockwell. Do you continue to produce so prolifically today?
Yeah, I do. I do. And, you know, it's nice. The age of media has exploded, as you know, being in your business. And it used to be where there were 6-8 magazines. Now there's probably like 12,000 magazines in America. And there's like thousands of radio shows and thousands of television shows and thousands of magazines. I mean, it just goes on and on. And it's fascinating to me, and it's media. And I love it, and I do a lot of media. It's something I enjoy and love, and we're living in a fantastic age now.
Even after all this time, is it still something of a thrill for you to walk past a magazine stand and see your work on a cover?
Yeah, it still is a big thrill. There's a little kid in me who enjoys it every time. You know, it's just how it is. You know, as a cover, sometimes there's a story in there with 2 pages, sometimes it's 16 pages, and sometimes it's 80, 90 pages. It's like mind-boggling. But on 2,000 and a few hundred page magazine covers, probably 2,500, 600 magazine covers, some stories were 20 pages long, some were 60 pages long. I have them all saved in a warehouse, and I got covers all over the walls here. Just to remind me.
Yes. and I was wondering if in the past, maybe, you know, before you became as established and well-known as you are today, did you face any kind of scrutiny over your work? And by that I mean, did anyone question, you know, you whether you were an artist or an illustrator? And did you feel the need to make any kind of distinction like that?
No. I'm an artist. I'm a painter. I'm a real artist. But there was time when I did magazine covers. I did things for Time magazine, for Life magazine, for Ladies Home Journal. You got to understand, I came out as an artist,
right,
and the age of media exploded, you know. Not only were there hundreds and hundreds of different magazines, hundreds of radio shows, hundreds of television shows. We're living now in a vast, vast age of media, and it's fantastic, and I love it, I enjoy it, and that's why you and I are on the phone together, doing a telephone interview. Isn't that amazing?
It is. Going out really all over the world if you want to stream us online. That's true. Can you give us some insight into your creative process and how you paint? Do you kind of have an idea in your head of what you want to go on the canvas before you sit down to that blank canvas, or does it just kind of tend to come out?
It just comes out, and I go along with the mood as I do it. A minute later, I could be in a certain mood, another minute is something else. Sometimes it's about color, sometimes it's about line. Sometimes I look at the piece as a composition, oh, it needs a little more here, it needs a little more there. Sometimes it's figurative, you know. So I know all the aspects of art, and I enjoy them all, and they're different things. And so I just go with that, and it's very, very much enjoyable to me. And I'm grateful that I'm an artist, that I have the ability to draw and paint, because it's a way of expressing myself with line work, with colors, with shapes and textures, and it's just unbelievable. And usually in the background, I always have music. You're probably a very good music lover, right, being in this field?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm a huge music lover, and I've become friends with all the greatest musicians. You have no idea. You know, Steve Tyler from Aerosmith, Presley was my friend, and Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, Ozzy Osbourne, all these guys were my friends, and I so respected them, and, you know, their styles are so different. It just was unbelievable to have these people in my life.
Yeah, you seem just as connected, to the folks in the music world, if not more so than the art world. And it seems like it's a big part of the creative process for you. I'm wondering if the music that you listen to while you're working influences what comes out on the canvas. And what do you listen to?
I listen to everything. I love classical music. I love rock and roll from the 60s. I love recent rock and roll. I love jazz, I love bebop. You know, there's so many different wonders in music. It's unbelievable. And I've got, maybe 4, 5, 6 radio stations marked on my radio. So we put those on, and I hired a guy about almost 8, 9 years ago, and I hired him only for my music. Now he does a few other things besides music, but my thing was he would just go out and get albums and CDs and play them for me, and then he would get me, and it was just an amazing thing. He was like so educated, knowledgeable in music, and so fulfilled my life. It's just fantastic.
Well, and I understand, from another interview I was reading online with you, Paul McCartney has been a great source of, providing you new music as well. And I don't mean just his stuff, but things he sent you.
Yeah, he's a very, very, very good dear friend of mine. And we talk to each other once every 2 weeks at least, if not sometimes once a week. So is Mick Jagger, and Keith was a big friend. And I have so many friends. I used to be, when I lived in Woodstock many years ago, and unfortunately we lost him before he was even 30 years old, was Jimi Hendrix. He was one of my best friends in the world. I met him at a cafe. Remember Albert Grossman? He used to be the manager of Bob Dylan.
Mm-hmm.
He was a very big manager. And Albert Grossman and I, one day he had a big restaurant, and Jimmy was there, and Albert introduced me to Jimmy, and he said he's a great musician, and then I went home with him to his house, and he played me some tapes, so, it was before he was even known, and I was just knocked out. I couldn't believe how amazing this guy was, and of course, when he became famous, I told people, hey, I told you so, this guy was beyond, he was over the moon. And, he didn't even make it to 30 years old, unfortunately. Sweet, sweet guy. What a sweet, sweet musician this guy was. Unbelievable.
Wow, that's a great story. And I know you maintain, these relationships even with emerging music artists today. Taylor Swift, I understand you had reached out to her wanting to do a series of portraits. I was curious about why you chose Taylor Swift. Did you know before you reached out to her that you had actually been one of her favorite visual artists growing up?
Well, it's because I loved her music, and I saw her album, and I met her, and she said how much she loved my work, and I said, Taylor, I got to paint you. So she sent me some pictures. I painted some portraits. I painted McCartney. I painted Aerosmith. I painted Mick Jagger. I did like 40 paintings of Mick Jagger in every position you can imagine. And I did Hendrix. I painted so many people, and I just love them so much for what they have given us,
Absolutely. And I've heard you say in previous interviews you paint or at least try to paint every day. I imagine being on the road as much as you are, that could be sometimes difficult.
Yeah, I paint all the time. I don't even think of it as every day. I'm just an artist. Like, how I could say to you, hey, I hear you breathe every day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Of course you breathe every day. And I paint every day because it's something I just love doing. I walk every day. I breathe every day. I listen to music every day. I like getting dressed casually, fun stuff. I love drawing. It's just something I love to do every day, but music has to be part of my life. I just love it so much and enjoy it, and just like, I praise the world because of music.
Did you ever get involved in playing music yourself?
Well, I tried to, keyboards a little bit and this and that, but I had so many musicians who used to come over and play for me, so I never, had what it takes in music. You need to practice so you can be good at it, and it's more, I like more listening, and I can dabble on the piano for maybe 5, 10 minutes, but then I find out I repeat myself all the time.
And you can join our conversation this morning with revered artist Peter Max ahead of his appearance and a retrospective exhibition of his work coming to Naples this weekend. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media. Send email to GulfCoastLive@WGCU.org or follow the live Twitter chat using hashtag GulfCoastLive. And changing gears a little bit, I know in the 1960s you took a trip to Paris and returned with a Swami who you helped get established and helped form the Integral Yoga Institute. Can you tell us that story? What was so compelling for you about meeting that Swami?
Well, when I met the Swami, his name is Satchidananda, and he opened up a bunch of yoga centers in America called the IYI, the Integral Yoga Institute. But when I met him, I was invited to come to Paris to be with Conrad Rupps, who was a young fellow my age at the time, like we were early 20s. He was the heir of Avon Cosmetics. So I flew to Paris, and we talked about me doing this and that and making some paintings. He just loved my work. And then he said to me, have you ever met this fellow, Satchidananda? I said, no, I haven't, but I have heard about him, you know. And I have pictures of me with Satchidananda, and this guy had some. So,
well, and can you speak to how working with the Swami really influenced or shaped your own worldview or spiritual connections, and maybe how that expresses itself in your work? Peter, Max, do we still have you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
What were you saying?
Oh, I was just asking if you could speak to us about how, you know, your work with the Swami really influenced or shaped your own worldview or spiritual connections, and perhaps how that expresses itself in your work.
Well, I always loved astronomy a lot, you know, planets and stars.
Yes.
And the Swami talks about God and the universe and the spirit within us. We're all connected with these beautiful, positive spirits. You have it, I have it, and lots of people, and, you know, holy people, they go deeper inside and experience that. And I started doing that, experiencing it. And, you know, I learned how to love the world even more, realizing how fantastic the universe is that we are living in and how fantastic we are in the world that I'm part of, you're part of, and everybody listening is part of. And it's a major, major gift from God, from the universe, that we're all alive and experiencing this wonderful thing. And it just fascinates me still today as we talk.
Hmm. And jumping ahead, I was hoping you could tell us just a little bit about some of these larger-than-life works that you've done. You know, you were commissioned by Continental Airlines to create a $160 million living canvas with your design of a Boeing superjet, and then also the Norwegian cruise liner Breakaway. Tell us about those experiences. You know, the hull of a ship is quite a different proposition than, say, just a large canvas.
Well, you know, today these things are possible, and painted a hull of a ship, but I didn't paint the actual ship. They sent me a model of the ship that was maybe 7 feet wide, and I looked at it for days, and then I had it photographed, and then I blew up the photograph maybe 10 feet long, and I printed it on a canvas. And then I started coloring it, and then I realized how much I loved it. So I did all these little paintings on it. You know, and anytime you look at a piece of work of mine at the ship, it's always like if you look left or right, a few later on, you can find another one like that.
All right. Well, let's take a phone call now with just a few minutes that we have left. This is Rod from Port Charlotte. Rod, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Doing good. Good. You're on the air with Peter Max.
Yeah, this is a concern of his work. He does great work, and I don't want to diminish any of the work he's done. But there are people out there who are impersonating him, who are reproducing fake works of art, and trying to represent it as their own. You see this sometimes even on recent cruise ships. Cruise ships is something suspect when they go 24 miles out and they won't sell an art painting until they're 24 miles out in international waters. What is the best and foremost way to identify an original work of art from your work?
Well, you got to know the work. You must have seen it on the internet. You go to petermax.com. You can see it. There's books out there by Harry Abrams. I have a best-selling book out right now. It's in every bookstore. And I've had magazines. I was very, very lucky. You know, when I came out with all my work in the late 60s, there was this huge, huge media explosion, right? You know, 10 radio stations became 100 radio stations. 5-6 television stations became 1,000 television stations. And media exploded, magazines all over the place. And so I got interviewed 1,000 times a year. It was unbelievable. And so I was able to relate to my fans, to the people. And it was just a fun thing to do. And I understand how big the world is. And luckily it's all connected now with media and electronics. And it's a wonderful world that we have, that we're living in, right?
Yes.
Indeed. Well, Rod, thanks so much for the call, and I'm afraid we are out of time. But again, thank you so much, Peter Max, for speaking with us today. It's been my distinct pleasure.
Okay, it's my pleasure to be with you. So for the fans, go to petermax.com. You can learn more about me, and all the best to you, my dear buddy. Thank you.
Thank you. A retrospective exhibition of Peter Max's work comes to the Mercado in Naples this weekend. Max will make an appearance, two appearances at the exhibition, on Saturday, January 24th from 6 to 9 in the evening, and on Sunday, the 25th from 2 to 5. There's more information on today's show and past editions of the program online at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. Continue the conversation on Facebook at WGCU Public Media and on Twitter using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. Thanks to my producers Richard Chinqui and Luke Martin. This is WGCU, Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.